Hello, and welcome to the Rochester Area podcast of Your Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. My name is Jan Heineman, and today I'll be reading to you from the Rochester Beacon, and maybe a little something extra for the holidays. Our first story from the Rochester Beacon comes from writer Jess Williams and is dated December 19th, Songs with a Mission. Tony Falzano has been writing songs for decades with the same mission, to help people in his community. The Caring Music Group, which he founded, is a performance troupe that performs music written by Falzano to support small nonprofits in the Rochester area, helping them secure sponsors and run their own fundraising events. At the center of these events is a show put on by the group, completely composed of original music written by Falzano. Rochester has no shortage of nonprofit organizations, but the ones that attract the help of the Caring Music Group are small nonprofits with small staffs, lower operating costs, and less marketing support. We try to raise them all the money we can based on our resources, and we're both small and unknown. You end up doing it for the love of it, Falzano says, as a playful nod to his song, For the Love of It, which is a heavily Broadway-inspired and lightly choreographed tune in the show. The show features a collection of Falzano songs that are performed one after the other, and the set list is chosen depending on the audience and the theme. The music at these shows is bright, accessible, and heartwarming, and is usually stylistically informed by the great American songbook pop, show tunes, and easy listening. Falzano says, music has its audience, and people who come to a fundraiser are not interested in anything too political, finger-pointing songs, loud music. You stay within the bumpers on the alley so that they walk out of there having an enjoyable experience. A night with the Caring Music Group typically brings in $5,000 to $10,000 for the beneficiary, with the most profitable night raising nearly $19,000. Which fits nicely with the scale of nonprofits the group works with. The nonprofits are responsible for hosting and running the event itself, while the Caring Music Group is responsible for the show. Caring Music staff member Laura Amick says Falzano often explains that the group owns everything from the edge of the stage back, and everything before it is up to the beneficiaries. While this statement is true, it doesn't reflect the support and guidance the Caring Music Group gives these nonprofits to plan the event, find sponsor support, and make sure the show runs smoothly. We've been doing it for 15 years, so you learn things, Falzano says. We encourage them to get sponsors, and they'll run ideas by us, and most of them are certainly worthy. It's a bit of a guiding process. This is an important aspect of working with the Caring Music Group, especially for small nonprofits that aren't regularly hosting events or attracting sponsors. While admission and ticket sales raise a good portion of the money, usually most of it comes from sponsor support. So, navigating that area of fundraising is a notable piece of those shows. Falzano says, it's the smaller groups that need somebody to do this. So, when you bring in three other people, and they've been doing this, and they have some of the knowledge you're looking for, and they can do the entertainment, it's a comfortable feeling to have. The group had three shows in November, one in support of the Mary Magdalene Church, one for the Rochester Northwest Rotary Club, and another for the St. Christopher's Church. all three nonprofits surpassed their fundraising goals. Previous beneficiaries include Rock Dog, Hearts for ALS, and Rochester Emergency Veterinary Services, among others. The Caring Music Group started with a handful of shows to support the Jiva Theater, but Falzano has been using his music to help the communities around him since he moved to Rochester in the 1970s after graduating from SUNY Geneseo. He lent his songwriting abilities to a group that put on musicals featuring Rochester teenagers. After reuniting with one of the teens decades later, in 2009, he was prompted to create some shows to raise money for Jiva. The Caring Music Group has been around ever since that first show in 2010, making 2025 its 15th year serving Rochester nonprofits. Some of the teenagers that he worked with in the 1970s are now involved in the Caring Music Group today. I needed an angle, I guess, Falzano says. People who are in need might be where the music goes and should go. It isn't only the Caring Music Group that Falzano uses his music for aid either. He has also found an audience in grieving individuals. After the music he wrote for meditation purposes caught the ear of a grief therapist he knew, Falzano was introduced to companies that provided resources to support those in a time of loss. This led Falzano to write pieces on the healing potential of music and to make albums specifically to help people recover. I'm not a performer. I never wanted to be a performer. I just loved learning how to write and to write songs that moved people, that made them either feel better or just, you know, made them happy, that would connect with people and make them feel better, he says. The Caring Music Group has a small staff team of 12 cast members and additional musicians who support the performers. All are volunteers, helping the beneficiary make as much money off the event as possible. Falzano says, "You've got to find the people that are willing to do a lot for nothing." And, you know, not a lot of people want to do that. I respect that. I really do. But no one in their right mind does this. The Caring Music Group played its last show of the year at St. Christopher Church, but they have fallen into a pattern of doing shows primarily in the autumn, after wrapping up their weekly rehearsals in September and October. Falzano says, "We would like to continue doing it. I think it's a need for anybody in any place throughout the ages and into the future. People are always looking for hope, so just go out and give it to them." This story from the Rochester Beacon comes from writer Jess Williams, who's a Beacon contributing writer and a former intern. And you're listening to readings from the Rochester Beacon on your Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Our next story from the Rochester Beacon comes from writer Shashi Sinha and is dated December 22nd. This is a letter to the editor, a guest opinion to the Beacon. And the writer, Mr. Sinha, is a Rochester resident, entrepreneur, and former H-1B visa holder. He recently ran for mayor of Rochester and has spent over 25 years in the technology industry. Shashi Sinha writes, "H-1B reform requires a more honest conversation. America has always been a melting pot of talent, and its status as a global leader in innovation is not an accident. Immigrants have helped build and run this country's tech sector and startups. They have powered our universities, hospitals, and the broader STEM workforce with skill and with drive. Foreign-born individuals account for 19% of STEM workers. Among U.S. startups valued at $1 billion or more, 55% had an immigrant founder. Almost 13% of education workforce is foreign-born. For higher education, that number jumps to more than 17%. In healthcare, over 17% of all workers in the field and a staggering 26% of physicians and surgeons are immigrants. Overall, immigrants play an outsized role driving the U.S. economy by fueling innovation and sustaining growth. So, it is in our national interest to continue to welcome the world's best immigrant minds. The H-1B visa program is the main avenue to bring talent into the country. Every year, 85,000 H-1B visas are issued through a lottery system. But the H-1B program is under fire. The federal government recently enacted a $100,000 fee for new H-1B petitions. Additionally, Congress is reviewing a bill to reform the H-1B and L-1 visas to raise the wage requirement and to add more U.S. labor protections. Some politicians are calling for the full elimination of the H-1B program. The national H-1B narrative has become, quote, tech companies versus American workers, unquote, and H-1B equals foreign programmers, or they are taking our jobs. This rhetoric makes H-1B program politically vulnerable. The debate needs a more honest conversation. We need to ask what exactly is broken and how do we fix it. First, the behavioral contract. H-1B program is not without its flaws. It's imperfect, exploitable, and due for reform. But if we're going to reform it, let's at least be honest about what it has become. Companies apply for H-1B visas to fill roles with foreign workers. The visa is tied to the employer. If the worker leaves the job, they have just 60 days to find another visa sponsor employer or leave the country. Recent analysis by the Pew Research Center finds that the majority of H-1B workers are from India, accounting for over 70% of the program in the recent years, mostly working in the tech sector. Companies love the H-1B program. Businesses like predictability, stability, and control. When it comes to workforce, H-1Bs provide that and more. H-1B status is like a behavioral contract. You behave, you stay. And employers know it. That's why so many companies quietly depend on H-1Bs. It's not just a talent pipeline, it's a control structure. I came to the U.S. over 25 years ago and lived the life of an H-1B visa holder in the tech sector. Eventually, I became a citizen, built businesses, and even ran for mayor in Rochester. I have also managed teams with H-1B workers. So, I write with experience on both sides of the table. Much of the debate is around whether H-1B workers drive down wages or whether there truly is a talent shortage. But what drives demand for H-1Bs isn't just talent shortage, it's the behavior the system encourages. The real reason companies love H-1B workers isn't because they're cheaper. It's about output, predictability, and control. To many Americans, the H-1B program feels like a wage issue and a way for companies to hire cheaper labor. But in reality, especially in tech and research sectors, these workers are often paid market or premium salaries. H-1B is a behavioral labor model. You can't find many American workers, regardless of background, who will consistently work late hours and weekends, stay silent, take direction without resistance, and live for years under the stress of visa renewal. It is often said that newly arrived immigrants work harder. H-1B immigrants are no different. Combine that with the desire to prove themselves and to fit in, H-1B holders often go the extra mile. In addition, H-1Bs are valued for how little trouble they cause. While they are eager to prove themselves and skilled in what they do, they are also tied to a visa they can't afford to lose, are unlikely to push back or ask questions, eager to overdeliver and put in extra hours, and are focused on performance, not work politics. This combination creates a workforce that delivers without resistance. That, in a lot of cases, is a manager's dream. Most hiring managers are not setting out to exploit anyone. They're simply responding to what feels like strong performance, alignment with expectations, a solid work ethic, and extra hours. From that lens, a high-performing H-1B hire doesn't feel like exploitation. It feels like commitment. And managers naturally lean into that pattern. That's where the systemic effect creeps in. That's what H-1B incentivizes. That's what companies love, knowingly or not. I remember what it felt like to know my future was tied to silence. Now, with distance, I see more clearly that the same system that promised the opportunities I sought also thwarted personal goals and freedom. Immigration, especially in tech, has driven real innovation, growth, and progress in the United States. But we can't pretend that it hasn't also become a way to install a low-friction, high-output, compliant workforce. Rochester's H-1B story. The new $100,000 fee may make things worse. Companies will likely seek to lock in workers with clawback clauses, making it even harder for them to leave or negotiate. The proposed fee won't hurt Silicon Valley. Big tech companies can afford it and will simply pass the cost on to customers. In fact, this fee may consolidate the visas in the hands of bigger tech companies, which can absorb the cost. Collateral damage will occur in places like Rochester's universities and hospitals, which likely can't afford to pay the $100,000 visa fee. When people think of H-1Bs, they picture computer programmers or computer-related jobs in general. In contrast to the current political rhetoric, Rochester's story plays out a little differently. Department of Labor occupation level data tells us that the majority of our H-1B holders are PhD researchers and professors at the University of Rochester and at the Rochester Institute of Technology, including postdocs advancing medical science, physicians filling hospital gaps, and engineers helping local manufacturers stay competitive. Though Rochester has never been a major destination for H-1B workers, there has been modest growth here. As the Beacon's Jacob Schermerhorn pointed out in his November 6th article, "The New Cost of Global Talent," Rochester has overtaken Buffalo in bringing H-1Bs in recent years. Additionally, further review of data tells us that Monroe County, mostly Rochester, over the last 17 years, based on data available at the USCIS portal, primarily brought H-1Bs in two areas: education, professional, scientific, and technical services, and healthcare. Rochester does have H-1Bs in tech roles, but those numbers now are modest and declining. The professional, scientific, and technical services category, which includes software and IT companies, has trended downward in recent years. Meanwhile, educational services and healthcare and social assistance have surged, especially in 2025. This reinforces the fact that Rochester's H-1B profile is shaped more by its academic and medical institutions than by tech firms. The fact that Rochester's H-1Bs are in education and healthcare matters. It challenges the narrow H-1B equals corporate profit narrative, and instead shows that the program supports essential public institutions, such as hospitals and universities, which are central to community well-being and long-term national strength. Without H-1B talent, Rochester's future-looking economy would be slower, smaller, and less competitive. The result? Universities will struggle to improve and stay competitive. There will be less innovation, longer hospital wait times, and fewer breakthrough ideas coming from our labs. H-1B reform. If we're serious and smart about H-1B reform, there are things to improve that will be beneficial to the country, as well as to places like Rochester. As part of the solution, we should first untie the visa from the employer. Let approved H-1B holders work wherever they want for the duration of the visa. This change will be beneficial to both American workers and the H-1B holders by taking away the behavioral incentive that companies have. Second, we should do away with the current lottery system in favor of a more intentional point-based system, similar to Canadian immigration, with focus on bringing the world's best and brightest here. This point system can be reviewed and adjusted annually to ensure the program stays true to its purpose and for the changing needs of the country. These reforms will address the H-1B's current flaws while ensuring U.S. leadership in intellectual, scientific, and innovation arenas. This letter to the editor of the Rochester Beacon comes from Shashi Sinha, who's a Rochester resident, entrepreneur, and former H-1B visa holder. He recently ran for mayor of Rochester and has spent over 25 years in the technology industry. The Beacon welcomes comments and letters from readers who adhere to their comment policy, which includes use of their full real name. You can write to the Beacon by email at letters@rochesterbeacon.com. And you're listening to readings from the Rochester Beacon on your Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. Our next story from the Rochester Beacon comes from writer Will Cleveland and is dated December 22nd. The Best in Beer 2025. There's still magic left in the tanks. This post is one in a partnership between the Rochester Beacon and veteran reporter Will Cleveland, who you might remember from the Democrat Chronicle, featuring articles published on his Substack site, which is called Cleveland Prost. Will Cleveland writes, "If you've been paying attention to beer in Rochester, Western New York, and the Finger Lakes this past year, you already know the vibes have been complicated. Let's be honest, if you're a regular consumer of Cleveland Prost," that's Mr. Cleveland's Substack post, "you can't help but pay attention. The industry is still bruised, still recalibrating, still trying to remember what normal looks like after all of this upheaval and uncertainty. Breweries are leaning out, leveling up, or in the most heartbreaking cases, locking their doors for good. And if one more tasting room quietly disappears from Instagram without even a "we out," I'm filing an emotional FOIL request." Pretty sure that's allowed. "And yet, because beer people are stubborn, optimistic weirdos, 2025 somehow became a year worth celebrating. Not because everything was rosy, but because the bright spots actually meant something. That's why this year's Cleveland Prost Best in Beer 2025 list feels different. It's less a victory lap and more a snapshot of a region grinding through adversity and still managing to pour some genuinely exceptional pints. It's a reminder that even in the down cycles, and yes, we're still very much in one, there's creativity, community, and just enough magic left in the tanks to keep hope alive. Hope pairs surprisingly well with a well-made Czech dark lager, by the way. About Rohrbach Space Kitty DIPA. Rohrbach Space Kitty DIPA has become a family staple. It's my in-laws' absolute favorite beer and has become a dangerously easy one to sample whenever I visit. It has now become a fridge staple for me. It represents that perfect pairing of value and taste. And when you grab it around town, you're pretty much guaranteed to find it fresh. That's Rohrbach's Space Kitty DIPA. Then there's Swiftwater Small Batch Schwarzbier. This variant of the brewery's wonderful Schwarzbier is a dark lager with a little extra swagger. Classic roast meets a whisper of fruity lift from the coffee cherries, giving it a subtle, unexpected brightness. Next, we have Frequentem New Zealand Pilsner. We all know how good Frequentem's lager game is. The Canandaigua Brewery's New Zealand-hopped Pilsner is one of those sneaky clear crushers that somehow tastes like a whole vineyard got flash frozen and blasted into your glass. The Sub-Zero Hop Keef Amped Nelson Selvin brings icy bright gooseberry, white wine zest, and a crisp snap. That's the New Zealand Pilsner from the Frequentem Brewery. Then there is Treehouse Rochester. I've written about this one extensively in the past month or two. It was exceedingly cool to see one of the country's most lauded and buzzed about breweries with a Rochester presence, even for a weekend. The Treehouse pop-up sale in October represented more than a can drop. It was a market test, a hype moment, and a temperature check all rolled into one. By bringing its famously hard-to-get beers here, Treehouse gauged local demand, injected national craft beer buzz into the scene, and hinted quietly at the possibility of future returns. Mostly, it confirmed that Rochester's beer drinkers will absolutely show up when something special lands. And I promise to keep digging and asking annoying questions until I positively nail down whether this New England craft heavyweight is intending to put down roots in Rochester. My gut still tells me yes, by the way. And then we have Breyer Brothers Brewing Honest Guy Czech Amber Lager. Breyer Brothers Honest Guy Czech Amber Lager is the kind of beer that immediately makes you nod, like, yep, that's the stuff. Toasty malt, a gentle caramel warmth, and that clean Czech snap make it endlessly drinkable. It's honest, all right. Honestly, the kind of pint you accidentally order twice. I apologize to no one for making the most obvious dad joke here. Then we have Big Ditch Hayburner IPA. Big Ditch's flagship IPA has basically become my emotional support beverage during Bills games. Much needed. There's something about a 19.2-ounce stovepipe can, equal parts optimism, coping mechanism, and ritual that feels right. Win or lose, usually both somehow, cracking one open has become as essential to Sundays as yelling at the TV. Then, the year I became obsessed with a Costco beer. The Kirkland, which is Costco's brand, Helles-style lager, is one of the most quietly impressive deals in beer, thanks to the fact that it's brewed by none other than Deschutes Brewing in Oregon and retails at $13 per 12-pack. Under its previous Deschutes branded name, this very recipe earned a gold medal at the Great American Beer Festival. So the quality isn't speculative, it's certified. The beer itself is a textbook Helles. Soft, bready malt character, a clean ferment, and a crisp, refreshing finish that feels more Munich Beer Garden than big box bargain bin. Its success underscores a growing shift in the industry. National retailers partnering with top-tier craft breweries to make store brand beers that are genuinely excellent rather than generic. As chains like Costco recognize that educated drinkers want both value and craftsmanship, collaborations with respected breweries are becoming more common. Minneapolis is a great beer city. In October, I spent a week in Minneapolis for a work conference. The sessions were dense but energizing, and the city itself proved to be a perfect host, easy to navigate. The city's light rail is so convenient and cheap, friendly, and dotted with lots of great food and beer. After last visiting the area in 2015, I knew it had a wonderful beer scene, but it has only grown and matured since my last trip. I made a point to revisit Minneapolis Town Hall Brewery, where the Masala Mama IPA on cask, which was as soft, fragrant, and perfectly conditioned as I remembered. Beer nerd credentials earned here. Remember when, way back in the day, Masala Mama was the top-ranked IPA in America on the Beer Advocate Top 100 list? I do. Then, next on the list is Arbiter Brewing's Ha Ha Pils, fresh off its Great American Beer Fest gold medal. That was another standout for Mr. Cleveland. Crisp, clean, and the kind of beer that makes you consider moving just to have it as your local. Northbound Smokehouse and Brewpub delivered a malt masterclass with its own GABF-winning Doppelbock rich and elegant, without ever tipping into heaviness. Then there's Sierra Nevada Pills. Outside of the Costco Hellas and the Jenny Light, this new Sierra Pills in the adorable 8.4-ounce cans was probably the beer I consumed most in 2025. It feels like a love letter to moderation and maximum refreshment. Then there's Lower Lakes The Phantom Dark Lager. It's a dark lager with real presence, a lovingly balanced blend of German and Czech traditions. Sleek roast, soft chocolate, espresso, and hints of stone fruit glide into a clean, easy finish. I first had it at August's Flower City Brewers Fest and immediately wanted more. Now, I can't wait to get to Hamilton to see what else they're pouring. Then there is Golden Age beer, Kellerwald. I've written about how much I adore the Pittsburgh beer scene on at least two occasions, once for the DNC and once more for this newsletter earlier this year. Golden Age, located in Homestead, is one of the purest expressions of Pittsburgh's beer soul, a place that doubles down on tradition with borderline monastic devotion. Lager only, German only, no gimmicks, no shortcuts. Kellerwald, a traditional Keller beer, meaning cellar beer, it is a hazy lager due to how young it is served before it has fully conditioned and clarified. It embodies that ethos, soft, herbal, and beautifully unfiltered. Then we have Counterpart Double Barrel Coniferous Blend. This Ontario brewery is one of my favorites to visit. The food is just as good as the beer. If you've read this space long enough, you'll recognize the affinity I have for the brewery's barrel program. Its wood-aged beers are exceptional. I was a huge fan of the barrel-aged barley wine's Counterpart released earlier this year and eagerly await the next barrel drop. I'm going to skim through the last few beers on Mr. Cleveland's list just for the sake of time. He also recommends Trophy Brewing's Méthode Traditionnelle. That's a brewery from Raleigh, and he recommends Jacksonville Beer Scene Surprises. He spent a week in Florida in March for a work conference, and there were several beer surprises for him, including Ruby Beach Brewing's Ruby Brews Day Red IPA. Then there was Myrtle Avenue Brewing's Jiffy Feet Black IPA. And the real revelation for Mr. Cleveland was Aardwolf Brewing's Belgian Pale Ale. That's another of his Jacksonville favorites. As we close out another year, one that felt at times like a hangover we just couldn't quite shake, it's worth remembering why we keep doing this. Not this, as in obsessively refreshing brewery tap lists, though guilty, but this ritual of taking stock of a beer scene that refuses to sit still. Rochester, Western New York, and the Finger Lakes aren't just dots on a map with stainless steel. They are communities built pint by pint, conversation by conversation, and, when needed, by the collective sigh of relief when someone finally brings back a fan favorite saison. What made 2025 special wasn't perfection, it was persistence. breweries, big and small, found ways to adapt, innovate, or simply keep the lights on long enough for someone to walk through the door and say, "Oh, I needed this today." So, as we look to 2026, I'm choosing cautious optimism, the official emotional stance of the Cleveland Prose Newsletter. There are challenges ahead, there always are, but there's also talent, ambition, and a stubborn regional spirit that's hard to count out. If this year proved anything, it's that great beer still has a home here. This story from the Rochester Beacon comes from a very good writer, Will Cleveland. He's a Rochester Beacon contributing writer, a former Democrat and Chronicle reporter, and he writes about beer in the Finger Lakes region and Western New York on Substack. And you're listening to readings from the Rochester Beacon on your Niagara Frontier radio reading service. Our next story from the Rochester Beacon comes from writer Jacob Schermerhorn and is dated December 23rd. Patterson appears unswayed by Santiago apology. Isaiah Santiago's recent apology apparently was not enough to persuade fellow Rochester City School District Commissioner James Patterson to drop his effort to have Santiago removed from the school board. Addressing his colleagues, constituents, and RCSD students, Patterson made a formal statement last week at his final business meeting as a commissioner. The remarks were made in response to Santiago's apology for his role in a shouting match that occurred between Santiago and Patterson in February. Patterson claimed Santiago used a racial slur during a heated argument following a meeting. After the confrontation, Patterson submitted a request for Santiago's removal from the board. In response, the board voted to pay for Santiago's legal fees in the case. If there is no charge, a hearing on Patterson's request is set to occur this month. Santiago has continually denied Patterson's claims, even in his recent apology. Instead, the 20-year-old commissioner claimed that the accusation followed a pattern of intimidation based on his youth. At last week's meeting, Patterson implied that his fellow commissioner's statements were false, and he does not intend to drop his request for Santiago's removal. Patterson said, "Mercy requires accountability, and true healing begins with ownership. To date, that ownership has not been taken. I urge you, Commissioner, to tell the truth. The truth does not weaken us, it frees us. If you, Commissioner Santiago, truly desire to repair harm and grow as a leader, you must take ownership. Because private apologies can never fully heal public harm. Leadership demands courage, and courage requires truth spoken openly." Patterson's statement also referenced the words of the late Representative John Lewis, Martin Luther King Jr., as well as his own self-described identity as a follower of Christ. "No slur, no insult, no careless statement can speak louder than what God has already declared over your life. Just as being called the N-word by Commissioner Santiago will never outweigh what my God says about me, I choose to believe the report of the Lord," says Patterson. "My identity is anchored in faith, truth, and purpose, not in hatred or ignorance." It was the last meeting for Patterson and Cynthia Elliott both of whom ran into challenges as early as this year during the primary election process. Elliott, who has 20 years of experience as a commissioner, did not file a petition to run after previously indicating that she would. Patterson's paperwork was rejected by the Monroe County Board of Elections for a lack of valid signatures. Both outgoing commissioners were honored in a ceremony preceding the business meeting, with Mayor Malik Evans speaking and issuing a proclamation marking December 18, 2025, as Cynthia Elliott Day. Evans said, "One of the hardest jobs next to being mayor is being on the school board. For anyone wanting to serve on the school board, even with a lot of criticism and challenges you might have, it is still one of the most noble things that you could do. And Cynthia, I know you would not have done it any other way." Evans, who served on the board for 14 years, was a colleague of Elliott for most of that time. He noted that other former board members who also served with her were in attendance at the ceremony, including Van White and Willa Powell. Powell also delivered remarks honoring both Elliott and Patterson, highlighting the connection she saw in their devotion to the Christian faith. This story from the Rochester Beacon comes from writer Jacob Schermerhorn, who's a Beacon contributing writer and data journalist. And you're listening to readings from the Rochester Beacon on your Niagara Frontier Radio reading service. Our next article from the Rochester Beacon comes from writer and editor Paul Erickson. It's dated December 24th. With AI's rise, hope and anxiety. At the year end, the Beacon did a survey on the rise of AI. Readers who took part in the survey were divided on AI, artificial intelligence, and its potential impact on areas such as the economy, education, news and information, and politics and elections. Their views mirror those found in surveys of Americans nationwide. Half of the respondents to the Beacon survey, and in general, they are pessimistic about the rise of AI, with 22% very pessimistic, 42% are optimistic, and 7% said they are neither optimistic nor pessimistic. They are most upbeat about the potential for advances in medical care, with 72% expressing optimism. By contrast, a large majority is pessimistic about how AI could influence politics and elections. That was the view of 88%, with nearly 60% saying they're very pessimistic. More than three quarters also are pessimistic about AI's impact on news and information. The science of artificial intelligence dates to the middle of the 20th century, but the last decade has brought dramatic advances in AI research and adoption. Corporations are investing massive sums in AI development. More than 1 billion people globally are using chatbots like ChatGPT, and many now predict that artificial general intelligence, AI as intelligent as or more intelligent than a human being, is on the horizon. This month, the architects of AI were named Time Magazine's 2025 Person of the Year. These tech titans, Time wrote, have grabbed the wheel of history, developing technology and making decisions that are reshaping the information landscape, the climate, and our livelihoods. AI already is a driving force in the economy. By some estimates, AI-related expenditures now do more than consumer spending to fuel GDP growth, and may have accounted for more than 90% of GDP growth in the first half of 2025. But the potential for large-scale economic disruption worries many observers. Anthropic CEO Dario Amodei, whose company developed the Claude large language models, has estimated that AI could push unemployment as high as 20% within 5 years. And while businesses are spending heavily on AI, a report from Massachusetts Institute of Technology in July said 95% of them are getting zero return from enterprise investment in generative AI. Beacon readers are split on what AI means for the economy here and in the US as a whole, but overall, concern outweighs optimism. A plurality, 45%, are pessimistic about AI's impact on the economy in the Rochester region, though nearly as many, 39%, are optimistic, and 16% said they're neither optimistic or pessimistic. Views on the U.S. economy were more upbeat. 44% of Beacon readers are optimistic versus 40% who are pessimistic. At the same time, readers were downbeat about how AI will impact hiring, work, and wages, with 77% saying they are pessimistic, and more than one-third are very pessimistic. AI's impact on the environment is another concern. Goldman Sachs estimates that data centers' energy needs will more than double to 8% of all U.S. power demand within 5 years, from 3% in 2022. 62% of Beacon readers are pessimistic about AI's environmental impact. When asked if AI is likely to be most beneficial or harmful to them personally, readers' responses were decidedly mixed. 35% replied not sure, while 34% answered mostly beneficial, and 30% said mostly harmful. For some people, the overriding concern about AI is the existential threat it one day could pose to humanity. In March 2023, more than 1,000 technology leaders and researchers signed an open letter calling for a 6-month moratorium on the development of new systems, citing profound risks to society and humanity. The number of signatures has since soared to more than 33,000. Jeffrey Hinton, the Nobel Prize-winning godfather of AI, who conducted foundational research on artificial neural networks, has estimated there is a 10% to 20% chance that AI will wipe us out. Hinton, among many others, has signed the Statement of AI Risk, which says that mitigating the risk of extinction from AI should be a global priority, alongside other societal scale risks such as pandemics and nuclear war. On Friday, that would be the third week of December, Governor Kathy Hochul signed legislation requiring large AI developers to create and publish information about their safety protocols and to report incidents to the state within 72 hours of determining that an incident occurred. 67% of Beacon readers said they're concerned about the potential threat AI poses to humanity. Only 7% said that they're not at all concerned. Possibly speaking for the majority of respondents, James Patterson wrote, AI will begin to teach and learn themselves, and therefore have no reason for further human input, interaction, and/or instruction. More than 160 readers took part in the Beacon's 2025 year-end survey conducted December 16th to 18th. Here's a few of the signed comments from readers. Stephen Mulkey said, AI is a tool, and tools are a means to an end. I'm skeptical that those in control of AI will pursue ends that benefit humanity. From a humanist perspective, technology and the capitalists behind it have mostly failed to make life better. Our social and economic systems have not adjusted to a post-scarcity world, and AI will amplify this disconnect. A better world is possible, but not if profit remains the only driver of innovation. We need a new value system that centers human thriving over neoliberal market worship. David Powell wrote, like every other technological advancement, once we work through the initial shock, AI will improve almost every aspect of our lives. We just need to focus on what AI can't replace, personal human-to-human interaction. That's just a few of the comments written in to the Beacon survey on AI. And this report on the survey came from Rochester Beacon's editor Paul Erickson, who summarizes it in the Beacon. And you've been listening to readings from the Rochester Beacon on your Niagara Frontier Radio Reading Service. My name is Jan Heineman. Thanks for listening today. Happy holidays to everybody, and I'll see you in the new year.